This podcast contains material that some listeners may find distressing. Content includes explicit language and themes related to workplace bullying, harassment, sexual harassment, intimidation, stalking, physical and sexual violence, discussions relating to self-harm and suicidality, disordered eating, other mental health issues, sexism, racism, and homophobia. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Behind Blue Doors, a podcast where women and allies have the right to speak their truth and share their stories. Saddle up for part two of Robert Ledigar's unbelievable story of allyship and the retaliation he experienced in acting with integrity and standing firm in his morals. He is the leader we all want and need, and yet he was pushed out for doing the right thing.
So I have a private attorney who's a great guy, genius. Just, they're amazing. And he was...
You're welcome to say his name. Any allies, we're happy to...
Raymond Granger. I mean, I'll send you his information. He's the best. And there was two other guys, Keith O'Donnell and Howard Sagaiti. Amazing. They're great. And they, you know what it is too? And I said it to him the other night. I was like, Ray, I was always afraid you're going to call me and be like, Bobby, forget it. You don't have a chance. He's like, no, he goes, I know you thought like that. Like you're scared because you become stupid. You become stupid. You believe what these people wrote about you and you think you can't win. You're like, this is all bullshit.
Well, and I think it's not, again, it's not stupidity. It's you are in the midst of an attack. The psychological warfare essentially is what's doing to you, right? And so then you start analyzing what you're doing and it's not uncommon to kind of catastrophize and think, okay, like this is going to end badly, or I'm the problem, or whatever it is, right? Because you start to internalize what's being told to you over and over and over. Well, because you can't believe it, right? Like
you just can't believe what you're hearing. You're like, and then you laugh because it's a sick joke. And you're like, I can't believe you guys are even investigating this. Like, what
is my life right now? Yeah.
Yeah. And then I'm still working. Don't forget, I'm working. They didn't suspend me. No admin suspension. I'm working. And my district entrusts me so much.
Right now you're working?
Oh, no. This was back then. During those investigations. During the investigations, you're working. I'm doing everything. But it's when they propose to remove you and they fire you, you know, to try to fire you. Then they take your gun and your badge, your creds, your car, your keys. Now you're
stripped of everything.
Everything. But you're still working. I'm still working. I'm still getting paid. And my chief and my marshal still kept me as the warrant supervisor. They're like, this is all bullshit.
How can they take your gun when you're still on active duty?
Yeah. Now I'm in the admin role. Because they're proposing to fire you. They're planning on firing you. So they take it all away from you now. And then
so
you have
like, when you say they're proposing to fire you, so is it like, do they give you like a, like for me, it was like a notice of investigation.
So they give that to you in the beginning. They tell you you're a target of internal affairs for conduct unbecoming.
Do they use the word target? Like you're the target of.
Well, we say target. I forget what it says on the thing, but you're the subject of an investigation. So that happened. Yeah. Conduct unbecoming. You had a catch all, you know, like really. But they're asking you questions as if you're a criminal. Like I committed a homicide or something. You're like, what the hell, you know? And no evidence whatsoever. No, I had the evidence I had was insane. I was against those people. And so now I got it. Now I'm defending myself while I'm working. And they're like, hey, we'll give you 8 hours of admin to talk to a lawyer or something. They're like, really? You know, like, so you have to do it at all these weird times. You got to pay. And the lawyers aren't free. That's a lot of money. And New York lawyers are a lot of money. And it's a business. I understand that. You have to pay bills. But so now you have to collect stuff. And like the biggest thing that they all say is get letters of support. No sweat. That specific case, I collected 122 letters of support. Unheard of. I hold the title for the Marshal Service for the most letters of support. And every letter is something different about me. Everybody backs me. And then I have evidence of against them. I go to this sit before the deciding official. And I have to pay for that. I have to pay to go down there. I have to pay for my lawyer, all that food, meals, miscellaneous, everything. And I win my case. She finds everything unsubstantiated. There's nothing here. This is ridiculous. And that was on Good Friday, 2017. I had to travel on a holiday to go down there right before Easter. And it's just disgusting. So now, but not only that, while I'm there talking to the deciding official, She has to tell me that she got a phone call from a civilian. We're like, what? She goes, yeah, this lady had information about you that you stole a prisoner's cell phone and gave it to her. We're like, really? How did that happen?
Oh, so the shit they come up with.
One day before I was going to sit before. So she's like, I have to report that to internal affairs. We're like, yeah, report it to internal affairs. And report, how did she get your phone number? How did she know about me? How did she know all this stuff? Witness tampering? Obstruction of justice? I mean, that's legit crimes. So she was stunned by it. So I gave her such compelling information that the week after my hearing with her, internal affairs went to the squad room in Long Island and kicked everybody out to look around to see what was in there, because they had derogatory pictures up there, racist pictures up there, unsecured stuff. And so I lit a fire under somebody's ass. So not only that, so now I'm being prior to going to see the deciding official, remember they said I owned a gym with a felon?
Oh, yes, right. Yes. How's that going?
Well, while I'm proposed to be fired, internal affairs gives me another target letter that I inappropriately handle an informant who's this felon. Well, in fact, that informant called me when he was in jail to give me information on a public corruption case that the U.S. Attorney's Office was working on and we were part of. But they turned around and said that the informant was living at my house. My wife was married to the informant. My wife now is dragged into this, that she was married to the informant. So I'm being questioned about illegal procedures of handling an informant. Yeah. While I'm being proposed removed, don't forget, I'm being fired and you're giving me more charges still on a topic that I'm being fired for. Because remember that they said that informant I owned a gym with. So now you're stepping on each other.
Yes, as well. Right. Of course.
So I go from that. And now don't forget, when I see the deciding official, I'm stealing cell phones and give it to her. So I have two more internals on me, and she still has to decide whether she's going to fire me or not. So after I see her 2 weeks later, she's like, unsubstantiated. We gave her more stuff. I had so much positive stuff. So now I have open internals on me. This is, remember, April 2017. Now come April 2019. I've been under IA for 2 years, and now they're going to interview me. 2 years. 2 years, you can't get promoted. You can't get any perks. You can't get nothing. And I'm working. I'm working full duty. I'm back, you know, because it was found unsubstantiated. I don't get any money back. I'm not given anything, nothing. But because I'm under internal affairs investigations, it's a joke. It's disgusting. It's a disgusting joke. So now April 2019. Me and my lawyer have to go to headquarters. I'm interviewed for 2 days.
Where is headquarters?
Arlington, Virginia.
Okay.
And I'm in New York. So we had to take a train down there. 2 days, I'm had to pay for two hotel rooms, breakfast, lunch, and dinners, train tickets, everything. And his rate, now he can't work. He has to work for me for 2 days. Sitting in interviews. The first interview, they asked me if I use racial slurs. My lawyer blows a gasket. He goes, we just went through this. Well, it's coming back again. If I use racial slurs, if I stole a cell phone, if I stole a camcorder and gave it to this person, if I steal bullets, ammo, and give it to a person, if I steal, sell, or take drugs, now I'm a drug addict. If I steal evidence, if I steal money, if I'm a bouncer at a bar, if I steal social security numbers and sell social security numbers, if I ever file for bankruptcy, this is all going on.
In an IA interview.
IA interview in headquarters and being recorded. These people are disgusting. And then, and you know, when you talk to them, they're sitting there smiling at you, but they're not being recorded. You know, and you're like, really? And again, if I'm a racist, if I ever use the N-word, if I ever said anything about Asians or Spanish, it doesn't stop. So we, you know, then they start overspeaking the investigators and they start saying things. And now we find out who made these allegations. So we're like, Why didn't you do anything that? But my biggest thing is now, remember, just off that, this, that topic there, and I bring it up not to them, but after the fact. Why didn't you drug test me? Why don't you try to clear me and prove this person wrong? Why don't you right a wrong? Why didn't you come? Because I was the evidence custodian. Why didn't you come and inspect the evidence lockers that I control? Then you talk about my informant. Why don't you investigate the informant files that we have? Why don't you interview the informant? Why don't you do this stuff? And the person who said I gave him drugs and sold drugs, and I gave him ammo and stolen property, why didn't you arrest that person for being in possession of stolen property? Nothing. So then we
that
go.
That person doesn't exist.
Well, it goes from there. They go, well, they start asking me about a deputy who worked for me. And if I ever fixed a traffic ticket that he got, and I'm completely dumbfounded. I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. They pull up my computer. And you know, when you had Skype and you can do instant messaging, he was messaging. I'm like, I don't even remember this conversation. I go, this guy got pulled up. It was a marshal. He was riding in New Jersey and got pulled over by a cop, and they gave him a ticket. And he's like, this guy's a scumbag. I'm, you know, typical. I'm like, okay, here, he's an asshole. Go take care of it. They said, I took care of the ticket. I go, where's your evidence? And in fact, they got that marshal and they suspended him for 3 days for what he did. But he knew somebody in New Jersey to get the tickets. I'm like, that's on him. How am I in trouble? You're a supervisor. And because we cursed back and forth with the language. They're like, you think that language is appropriate for a government affair? I'm like, this is where we're going now. So everybody else can curse and say bad words except me.
So funny. We've just been talking about this on previous podcasts with other people. Same thing. Like, all of a sudden, me saying the word asshole became... you can't say that in the office. It's like, have you, like, my entire career, I've heard nothing but disgusting, vulgar language. And now you want to say, because I use the word asshole, like, you're going to try and use it against me. It's ridiculous.
Yes. And that's what they did to me. But you know what? It gets in your mind because you're already stressed out and you're already scared. You're already a target and you'll lose everything. You're going to get fired. I'm like, because they're coming at me to fire me, period. Or they're actually trying to put me in jail. They're thinking, I'm going to go to Rikers Island. You know, like, what are we doing here? So that was day one. So now I got to go back the next day. They're like, what do we talk about the next day? Oh, a deputy who worked for me got into an incident in town. He was under internal affairs. He got jammed up big time, a drinking incident and everything, but he worked for me. Well, his city case was dismissed. Now he was under internal affairs, but he's still a person. He's still a marshal. I'm like, hey, go across the street with these guys to probation to grab somebody and come back. Okay, you gave him an official job to do. You put him in, I did everything bad. Meanwhile, I made him feel like a person. You know, this guy was, he's ready to lose his mind. You know, when you're jammed up, you're sitting in a corner. Plus, I'm already jammed up and I got to supervise somebody who's jammed up. So I'm like trying to make him feel good. So they throw that on me for failure to supervise. I'm like, you know what? That's like a badge of honor, that one. You know, to have that, like, I made this guy feel good. And if I have no children, I said, but I would want him to be my son because he's that good of a person. And you dirtbags, you want him to kill himself because he got jammed up. So then they go,
that point is worth mentioning, is that they either, and it's the same in all these organizations, they either want to see you crumble and kill yourself or go away quietly or slink away. But they, when I say psychological warfare, like, it's no joke.
Yeah.
Like, that is full-on tactics.
Let me stay off some of all the other crazy charges, because it goes on. There's everything from I was a drug dealer to I was having sex with my informant's girlfriend. My wife was having sex with my informant. The best though is I'm a drug dealer. I just love that. I'm like, you didn't even drug test me. You know, clear. But these people lie. They did nothing to them. Nothing at all. But yes, it is. It's all psychological warfare. And they come at, and it's just a pressure, and the pressure builds up to an intense explosion. And yes, they want you to kill yourself. And my wife said that to me. My wife is not a cop. She works in the finance world. She was like, if what was happening to her, what was happening to me happened to her, she's like, I would have killed myself. There's no way. She's like, I don't know how you can do this. And you know, I want to see what's going to happen tomorrow. You didn't get me today. What are you going to do tomorrow? Here I am, you know? And they're dirty people. They're evil, mean people. And it went from these people who lied about me to the people who should have been protecting me up at headquarters. And they didn't. They let me down. They didn't help my district managers. They screwed them over. And what made it real bad is I told those people in internal affairs that I was being retaliated against. I told people at headquarters that these people were bad actors. They were coming and sitting outside my house in the car to intimidate my wife, and my mother-in-law lived with us. And my neighbors were telling me that there was undercover cops here. I was getting pulled over by certain cops because the tint on my windows was too dark. It's a cop car. It's an undercover cop car. When you run the plate, it comes back unknown. It's a cop car. You know who I am. And I got pulled over a bunch of, you were swerving. Really? I'm changing lanes. What are we doing here? And it's a cop car.
No, it's a complete attack on your life. It's disgusting.
Every single part they want to touch every single part of your life.
What gets me, I want to put this out. It's like they came I had a driveway, I had a nice house, I had a nice life, putting screws in our tires, in my wife's tires. So like you're going to have a blowout on a highway. Like you want to kill us? So I live that movie Copland. Like, what do you do? And you know, when you hear people say, you always hear it like, it's always cops or military guys. Oh, if anybody did anything to my family, my wife, my kid, I kill you. Really? Really? You think you would kill somebody? Because I had it done to me and I'm a military guy and I'm a cop. What am I supposed to do? Start going after all of them? You can't. You're outnumbered. So me and my wife,
No, Bobby, you're literally in the biggest organized crime group in the world. That's what it is.
You know what? And being part of it, you don't want to believe that, but they're like, I worked with a lot of great people. I really did.
Me too. I get it.
Listen, on that case, we were just talking where I got fired now. I collected 166 letters, more than the first case. And I got a petition with 75 signatures on there. So now we're over 200, including a federal judge supporting me. I got lawyers, U.S. attorneys. I got titled people. Everybody put their name and title on a piece of paper to support me. And these people, headquarters people, were like, no, Bobby Lediger cannot be rehabilitated. His misconduct. Now I went from crimes to misconduct. That was what misconduct with all. That's it. They're like, we don't have any faith that he can be rehabilitated because his misconduct is so egregious. I thought one of the funniest things in the letter to fire me from the deciding official, who I think is just a disgusting person because she knows me and she knows all the actors. She put in there, and it's a templated letter. That's what makes it look so stupid. She puts in there, the Marshal Service management has no faith or confidence in Bobby Lediger to perform at a satisfactory level. I was like, and I said to her, I go, you know what? You're right. I don't. That's why I perform at an outstanding level. I want to be above that. I don't want anybody to get killed. I don't want anybody to die. I don't want anybody to get hurt. So I bust my ass every day. But you think you know more than me. And you don't believe. Well, I got letters of support from every chief I ever worked for in Brooklyn. And they still talk to me. They never turned their back on me. I got letters of support from people from that task force. They supported me, not even their own people.
So you were saying, so there was one trial and then there was a second?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I had two.
When was the second one?
That was in January 2020. I was proposed removal. It was the end of February 2020. I had my hearing to be fired. And listen to this one now. You got to pay attention to this one. So now don't forget, January, we get hit with the pandemic. So I go down to headquarters to go meet with the deciding official. We only talked to her for not even an hour. And we already knew the writing was on the wall. She wasn't listening to me. She already her walking papers were put in, you know, what she had to do to me. But now I'm on leave because I can retire June 30th, 2020. So I got all this leave on the books. I'm like, I'm taking it. We're in a pandemic. Everything's getting shut down. People are teleworking. I put in my papers to retire. April 17th, 2020, Human Resources sends me my papers, all signed off. You're going to retire June 30th. I got the green light to retire. That was on Friday, April 17th, 2020. Monday, April 20th, 2020, you're fired. They don't even talk to each other. They knew I was given permission to retire. And the reason I needed to retire on June 30th, 2020, that was my earliest eligibility date where I hit 25 years. So like for me, I had to do 25 years or turn 50, whatever came first. I turned 50 on August 9th, 2020, 2 months later. So they got me. They had me. And when they...
You lost your pension?
I lost my pension.
Disgusting.
I lost my medical benefits and my Social Security, you know, the Social Security supplement to go on there. And now add more fire to it is that I was in the Navy for almost 7 years. I bought that time back because in the government, you can use that because it's all government. And it went on the back end to increase my years for retirement for my pension. Gone.
Whoa.
So I lost everything with
malicious, it. Sadistic, just.
And no crime. I committed no crime. And now if I was a criminal, I'd understand. You wouldn't talk to me. You know, I committed a crime. I did something heinous. But no, nothing.
No, you did the right thing. All and you standing were up all for standing up.
But you know what? So Susan, to come at you now, what's so weird in my head is that it's just not, I can't comprehend it because I'm the target. I'm it. It's all me, 100%. And I don't understand is how, and again, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a scholar. Where everybody's like, well, this is pure retaliation. Like, no. Now, for me, it started investigating me off a lie. We know it's lies, but they just ignored that it was a lie. And in the general counsel, the marshal's legal, just let it fester and they manipulated it. So, like, that's why I'm afraid. I'm afraid I'm going to lose because they lie. And it's
the ability, and they have vast resources to make.
And then I fear the judge is knows in her heart that this is all disgusting. But I fear that she can sit there and be like, hey, listen, even though this is disgusting what happened, you did break some rule. You did make mistakes. I made mistakes. I'm not going to deny that. But the way you found those mistakes was illegal. Like why wasn't I given a fair treatment or
a fair investigation?
No,
or
why wasn't I? Why did you? Why?
Well, they go searching for things, right? So everybody makes mistakes. There is not one person out there, myself included, who has not made mistakes.
Yeah,
but they go searching for those mistakes to use as legitimate ammunition towards their larger goal.
Yeah.
Right. So they find those little pieces and then, well, this is true. So this other thing must be true. Right. So they just.
It's just, and it sits in your mind. And that's why you, like, I feel sad. I feel, I'm ashamed. I'm embarrassed. I'm disappointed. Everything like that. And it sucks. It just sucks. And like, but my wife, you know, from day one, from back now to the racist investigation, even when I was supporting back in the day with Dawn. My wife was like, I'm proud of you for protecting Dawn. That was it. That was good. That's all I needed. That was it. And I had everybody there. And I was like, I told the truth. My chief told the truth. I'm like, what are we doing? And then when I got fired, my wife had to wrote a statement. And she told the lady, the deciding official, she's like, it's so disgusting that these men have wives of their own, and some have daughters, yet they did this to Dawn. And now what are you doing to me? Meaning my wife, like, what are you doing? And I told
And what are they teaching their sons?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like this.
I mean, I had one of the girls, ladies that worked for me, and we're friends, and she's Spanish, Dominican or something. Like, we don't care, you know? And her husband is a great man and we're friends, and he was a NYPD detective. And he told his wife, He's like, you'll never get a boss like Bobby. Never, ever. And I mean, she write, I can't even talk to her halftime because we cry on the phone because it's just heartbreaking. I mean, she was in, they were in Walt Disney World and we went and saw them. And I got more pictures with her daughter than the daughter has with Mickey Mouse. You know, like she just commented, like, it's just a group, you know, because you can feel it. You know, you can feel the friendship and the care, just care. But like, there's another girl, lady, woman, whatever, you know, works for me. And she got jammed up and I protected her, you know, and she came over and I welcomed her to our group. And she knew one of the investigators. And she told them, and this girl is Black. I thought she was Spanish. And so she calls the investigator, who she knows, and she goes, you think Bobby's a racist? He don't even know I'm Black. He thinks I'm Spanish. So how are you? She goes, and he's still, I'm like, I didn't know. I thought you were Spanish. Because she's light skinned. I'm like, I just thought you were Spanish. She's like, you're an idiot. You don't even pay. I'm like, what am I supposed to pay attention to? This is what's it. This is because.
Yeah. You know, you're like, oh, do you, you know, you're a good employee. You're working hard. You know, you're doing your job. That's all that matters.
Human being.
You're a nice human
you're
being.
You're a person. Yeah. You're a person. So they come after me. And when we looked at everything that they think they nailed me on, it all came down to me helping people. I just help people. I may have done it.
Which is the best leadership.
Well,
I know it doesn't feel like it right now because you got so screwed for it. But honestly,
you're a true leader.
You're a true leader.
No, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I wasn't, you know, I wasn't planning on being, you know, a hero.
Yeah, none of us expect to be no, in but this
I
position.
Would, and I was the guy that came into work and I'm like, all right, you know, and you would do stuff at work and you just, I'd be like, yep, I just saved the world today. Captain America. I did it. That's it. But you would joke. You would tease each other and they'd be like, oh, you would have, thank God, you know, we bust each other chops. Like the Spanish lady I was just talking about. She walked in. She's like, oh, Wonder Woman's here. She had Wonder Woman mugs on it. She's like, I'm here. I did it. You know, if it wasn't for me, the whole courthouse would fall down. And you would tease each other, but you expected each other to do it. I had one guy sit there, a guy say it, and they're like, Bobby is the hardest guy in the world to work for, but I want to work for him. I'm like, wow, these are like great, you know, it makes you feel great, you know, and you.
Because you're fair. You're validating to what they're trying to de-evaluate about you.
But yeah, sitting you know? Here talking, but sitting here and talking to you guys, you don't feel great. You feel, I let what they write about me and did to me.
You're internalized.
And you know what they do? And they do. And the government does that. And I didn't really, I still can't grasp it as how they financially destroy you to win. Because you can't afford.
Every aspect.
And that's what the whole goal is. The whole system's dysfunctional, but they play it out because they know, like, you got to get a job. You got to go do something. And you can't, I can't afford to just have my wife work and not get by and do things. And like, you got to put your mind to do something and they don't care about you. They don't care.
Have you heard about the, because we've just recently heard about it, the Whistleblowers Act that's in the United States. We don't have one in Canada, but you have one in the United States that we just heard about from Jane Turner.
I'm good friends with Jane Turner. Is all over me. She saved my life. Also, a girl named Jackie Garrick, Whistleblower of America. She's another one who saved my life. And I mean, they're awesome. You know, they're great. But yeah, you know what? I was identified as a whistleblower. I didn't even know I was a whistleblower. You know, I'm like,
I didn't either, right but thing. I am.
I'm like, I don't know. I just, you know, I did what I had to do, you know, and they're like, no. And, but my lawyers, you know, when they put it out with the case and everything, was, you know, it's hard to prove and write up and everything. It's really, it's pain, but.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot of work. And then having to, you know, the experience from the other people we've spoken with is having to write it out and rethink it all is just, it's just re-traumatizing. It's just like, you know.
Because you have no control over what's happened. You do the right thing. And then literally your life is in the shitter because you've been an upstanding human being. And you have zero control over your destiny.
It sucks. And like you guys, did you saw the interview with that Sarah Wallace and
last night? Yeah, yes, we did.
It was cool.
Oh, tonight.
It was, and you know, of course they edit it, and you're like, oh man, I you know, thank goodness they did, because I was like flipping out on them, but. It was great, but she put it out there like, this is how it started. Like, I just, this girl got harassed and you treated her like garbage, and I stepped up. And the Dawn, you know, and so now I defended Dawn, and now today she's defending me. That's the full
story. Where is Dawn at these days?
Where is she?
She's still working. She has a few more months till she can retire. But they went after her. So those guys all made up allegations against her. And the government, the marshals went after her then and tried to jam her up. And they settled. She then put in EEO and they settled it. So she got
what is that?
Equal employment opportunity case. And they said,
is that a separate body from?
Yeah.
From the U.S. Marshals?
When you go through the U.S. Marshals, and then it goes off into the commission. But they settled before a mediator. And she got money back. They actually suspended her for like because she brought her dog to work, or she had pictures.
I've heard that. I have heard that. That is not the first time I've heard that.
Yeah, she's So, and then she got a promotion, and now she's working, but she's scared to death. You know, she's afraid every day.
Did you not go through what was it? EEO or
equal employment opportunity?
Yeah,
I do. I have two cases going. I have the MSPB, that's the Merit System Protection Board, that's to fight them terminating me to get my pension back, and I also have an EEO with the EEOC, and that's for harassment and retaliation, and that's just you know, a couple of steps behind the MSPB, so they're running, you know, parallel.
Now this is obviously in hopes to get back what's been taken. Financially, and then to continue, you know, a lot of us, we join the government jobs for the security. Like I know for myself, I joined because I knew that, you know, I wanted the security for myself, for my future, my daughter, you know.
Well, I'm just fighting now to get my pension because they know I want to retire. I'm not looking to be reinstated. I can't. They threaten my life. I can't be protected by them. They don't care about you.
Well, it becomes a very undesirable place to want to work anymore.
Well, you can't function either, right? Like you're not literally when they do all their tactics, it creates trauma.
I don't trust any of them. You know, I'm not. It's gone. And there's no pride left. I wouldn't be proud.
Exactly. I know. I never thought I would feel so unproud to be in a police
service. Even when I sit there and people say, oh, do you support the police? I'm so disgusted by the police. And it's not even the police. It's just these peoples. But I'm, you know, I don't want to identify myself as a cop. I definitely don't want to identify as a marshal. I had other guys tell me they're like, I don't even carry my retired creds. I'm like, I don't give a shit about that. I'm like, you know, they're like, that's embarrassing to say I was with the Marshal Service. I'm like, wow, I didn't, you know, I was happy, you know, but it really was. It was just a job. I was very good at it.
So in your opinion, just as we're coming to a close, in your opinion, what needs to change in the policies, procedures, and would it matter if they were changed?
Oh, it has to change, but the policy and the procedures, they're too confusing. They're too confusing, and they're too complex, and they're just too vague. Like, put it down in paper. Write it down. Like, listen, you cannot, you know, smoke weed and be a cop. Period. That's it. Just put it down. Don't dance around it and try to hurt somebody or dance around it to help one of your friends. You know,
well, I think like having clear consequences for the action. Is someone suggested that? Like, okay, so you do this, you're going to get fired. You're going to lose your job. If you do this, you're going to be suspended for a month. You know, like so. Yeah. There's clear guidance, but then also people have to be held accountable. So you can't just pick and choose which ones you enforce.
No, and you can't just go after certain people just because you don't like. Listen, come up and be like,
that's
hey,
all they know how to do. That's what they've been doing for centuries.
And they keep doing it, and it's despicable. It's just absolutely despicable. When there's stop protecting your friends who committed crime but going after one of your non-friends just so we could take the light off that person and be like, hey, listen, we can't get to that case right now because we're investigating this guy for, you know, misusing his government car. Really? This guy just raped the girl and he's in jail. Like, what are we doing here? You know, it's stupid. And you can't promote incompetent people. You cannot promote somebody who sits in an office all day and reads policy and books, but never did the job. You have to have experience. You got to know how to do police work. You can't promote people and keep them in that position as the chief or supervisor for 10, 15, 20 years. It just doesn't work. And you can't, you know, you got to move people around. You can't keep them there. Like, and for me, I'm not trying to be selfish or whatever that is, but for me, you cannot have like the Marshal Service headquarters people in those positions for more than 5 years. They're in there for 10, 15, 20, some of them retire and they come back as a contractor and they're still doing the same job. You're like, what is this? You mean to tell me there's nobody else that can do these jobs? You know, and it's like,
no, they hold them sacred. So they let them, you know, I don't know about where you are. We have 10-year policy in most of our units and bureaus. So a certain amount of time and then they've got to move on.
No, not here. No way. You can, I mean, like me, I did my whole career in Eastern New York, but I got promoted and you go into different sections, you know, you move around, you know, and that's it. You do it. And you can't, it's in the districts, it's different because you're working, you're doing the job, you're interacting with bad guys or you're interacting with a judge or you're not just sitting in a headquarters office creating policy that makes no sense. You know, it's almost like, you know, it's so funny in like the government, the U.S. government, you know, somebody wrote a policy that you got to use a black ink pen instead of a blue ink pen. Really? What does that matter? And then, you know, that person got an award and everything.
Our notebooks have to be written in black pen.
Yeah, like what? Yeah.
We're not allowed to use blue. We're not allowed to use red. We have to use black pen.
Yeah.
What if your black pen runs out and you only have a blue one?
You know, you got to find another black pen.
What if, like,
these are the things you get suspended over, Susan. Don't mess with the pen.
Yeah. You're going down. That's it.
Right now,
and
Bobby,
that's the reason that they would look for if you did it right.
So, and the look of your notebooks, and you missed a time in here, so you're getting done with, you know, incomplete notebooks. Which, if you went through everybody's notebooks, there'd be some missing, you know, times and whatever, because sometimes you're scribbling so fast. But, Bobby, I wanted to ask you, I know that from what I read, I don't know if it's called a GoFundMe, but you have something. I'd love it if you could let the audience know. So whoever's listening, if they feel inclined to support you, that they can. Please go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for bringing that up. Yes. I have the National Police Defense Foundation supporting me. They created a legal defense fund that is just strictly to pay for my legal expenses, because that's all I'm asking for or hoping for. It's a website. It's www.npdf.org. O-R-G. And if you go on that site and, you know, scroll down a little bit, you'll see a picture of me with my story. And there's like a little page of write up about who I am and what happened. And then you can click on to donate if anybody would donate. I mean, that would be awesome.
Yeah, I know this has been very hard on you and your entire family financially,
emotionally.
Oh, well, it's physically, that goes mentally, without, yeah. You know, it just takes a toll on your whole life. And I'm sorry that you are going through this and experiences for so many years, as this is what they do. They drag us through it for years.
Yeah. That's another tactic, right? You string it along, right? Because you don't break. They'll just keep making it worse and upping the ante until you do break.
Right. But I want you to know you are being heard. We appreciate what you're doing. I'm sure Dawn totally appreciates you and what you did. The fact that you're being punished for doing the right thing and being the leader that we would all like to work for and wish our leaders would have reported for us, for the women that listen to this podcast who are police officers, we thank you.
Thank you. Honestly. That's nice. Thank you. You know, you don't expect to be given what, like any kind of, you know, praise or anything being, and I'm jammed up, you know, like it's so, it's hot.
Because they're telling you what a piece of shit you are and you're not, they're a piece of shit.
They are. Yeah, oh my God, they are. They're all pieces of shit. Yeah. But, you know, it just sucks that you guys, you know, say thank you for doing this. And then I got those guys not believing you or me, you know, like,
you know the truth, and they can't take that from you. They can't persuade or change our minds about who you are and what you've done, because we've all been through it. And the same playbook, whether you're in Canada, whether you're in Scotland, England, yeah. Like, we are all experiencing the same thing you are, you know. And the fact that to see that they do this to a man who was protecting a woman, that your career is done over that, is just sick. It's sick. Yeah. And I'm so sorry.
No,
but
thanks for doing this. Thanks for putting this together and talking. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And to the audience, anyone who can support Bobby in this fight, it'd be greatly appreciated, not just to his family, but to the Blue Cat, the Behind Blue Doors podcast crew. So thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have any last kind of words to say to the audience before I put you on the spot now?
I know, yeah. Right? I wasn't ready for that one. No, I don't know. None really. You know, like, listen, I just, you know, thank God for my wife. Thank God for her, because she, you know, you go every day, we go, you know, we'll argue, and then we hug and make up, and, you know, she just, I never thought my wife would be tougher than I am at this. And she's like, you know,
that's so nice to say.
You know, like, don't give up now. It is, you know, we got more fighting to do, you know, so great.
How many years have you been married?
I think we actually did, I think it's 21 or 22. And
she'll tell you when she hears the podcast, she'll be like, Bobby. Well, thank you again so much.
Thank you guys. I really appreciate it. And I'll talk to you guys soon.
Thanks for joining us today. Be sure to subscribe to the Behind Blue Doors podcast to catch the latest episodes. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And check out our website at www.behindbluedoors.org. Take care, and until next time.